The Boston Celtics going to the conference finals. It's a bonus episode on a Saturday. So, Millie, let's go. Rain and Jay's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This is the truth like 34. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly.
Hey there, John Corrales, MassLive.com, Boston Celtics beat reporter, saying thank you for a bonus day of listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast. I didn't do it at 2 a.m. because at 2 a.m. I was still writing. By 3 a.m. I was just wrapping up, and I decided to go to bed instead of doing a podcast. What I did this morning, Saturday morning, was a radio appearance on the Big Jab in Portland, Maine, which went about 20 minutes. So I'm going to share that with you, which kind of is a back, nice back and forth, and covers a lot of the topics that we would cover on the podcast. A couple of things that I just want to share before, because we touched on a lot of different things. The defense in this game was just out of this world. I have to make sure that I am properly relaying how awesome this defense was, and I talk about it in this radio hit, but The Marcus Smart play was just an all-time legendary play. That block shot was amazing. And if the Celtics go on to win a championship here, that's going to be one of the highlights of this run and something that you see in the scoreboard for, like, years when they do the intros for Marcus Smart. Like, that's on Marcus Smart's all-time highlight. The other thing that I have to mention right up front before we get into this radio thing that I did is Kemba Walker, who struggled in this game. But if anybody out there was out there calling him garbage or saying things like anything slanderous, you're an idiot. I know heat of the moment, but you gotta understand that moment for Kemba Walker where the entire Toronto defense is aimed at taking him out. And then he has a bad shooting day after that. He finally gets going in the second half. He finally gets some open shots and he misses. Okay, he had a tough shooting day. Kemba Walker has carried the Boston Celtics for so many times this season. Kemba Walker is one of the reasons why the Boston Celtics were even the third seed. Kemba Walker has been great and fought through this knee injury, this knee soreness, time and time again to put up great games, great numbers. He had big games in against Philadelphia. He punished Philadelphia in a sweep of the Sixers. In three of those four games, he shot over 50%. He had 32, 24, and 22, and 19 in those four games. And hey, by the way, in games 1 through 3, 18 points on 6 of 11 shooting. Game 2, 17 points, didn't shoot particularly well. Okay? But game 3, 29 points, 9 of 15 shooting, 4 of 7 from 3. 7 of 7 from the line. He's had big games, these playoffs, this run. And you're out there calling him garbage because he had a couple of bad games? Like, that's just insane to me. The fact that people turn so quickly and are so free to put out there things like that. And the fact that Lou Merlone has to hop in. Like, Lou Merlone doesn't know what it's like to be on a team. That's the part that really bugs me. That a guy like Lou, who's on a team, that understands what it's like for players to struggle. And struggle in big moments sometimes. Against a defense that was geared to take him out. Kemba struggled in games 6 and 7. No doubt about it. But you know what? This is a team. This is a basketball team. And they picked him up. And after the game, these guys were so happy that they could help carry him into the conference finals. And he admits, yeah, they saved me. But Jaylen Brown said, Kemba, I'll do anything Kemba asked me to do because I know he's doing the work too. That's what a team is about. Sometimes other guys step up. Sometimes a guy has a bad game. So I really wanted to address the fact that people were calling Kemba garbage on Twitter, on social media, and who knows where else out there. Okay? It's just ridiculous to turn on a guy who has been so important to this team all year long, who was an all-star this year, a no-doubt all-star. The hint of anybody struggling, all of a sudden they become garbage. Who the hell are you to turn around and call somebody garbage? What have you done? Kemba Walker was important in this game by occupying a guy and having the Celtics play 4-on-4 and getting open corner threes. Kemba Walker in this game helped by dishing four assists and getting two steals and a blocked shot. He still did other things. He didn't shoot well. Watch the rest of the game. No, he didn't have a good game, but he still helped the team. This is a team that's going to the Eastern Conference Finals, and he's going to be big in those Eastern Conference Finals because they're going to need him to be. And he's going to have himself at least one or two or three more big games. And you know what? He's also got Jason Tatum on his team, Jaylen Brown on his team, Marcus Smart on his team, Gordon Hayward's coming back. Someone else is going to have a big scoring night, and Kemba's going to willingly take a step back. Because that's what Kemba does. Kemba will step back if another guy's having a big game. He is so important to this team. To turn on him, I thought, was just gross. That really is gross. That being said, now let me share my appearance with Mannix and Mannix on the Big Jab in Portland, Maine.
Jeff and Taylor are back with you here on the Big Jab Saturday with Mannix and Mannix, and we'll talk a little Boston Celtics right now as we get ready to finish off the show here. Our good friend John Corrales joins us right now. Of course, you can read him at Mass Live and hear from him on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We know it was a late night for you, so thanks for being with us here today.
I'm doing this before coffee. So,
Okay.
Don't take anything I say seriously.
We never do.
No, that's
well, the Celtics got through a little bit more of a rock fight, I think, maybe, than people would have expected for a game seven. But the Celtics defense, I think, certainly shone through.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at a time where they needed something to go really right, it was the Celtics defense, highlighted obviously by that Marcus Smart block shot on Norm Powell when he had the opportunity to tie the game with about 30 seconds left there. They forced 18 turnovers and scored 31 points off of those turnovers in a game that you win by five. That's massive. Mm-hmm. They had, 12 steals in this game, five block shots. The offense was always going to struggle against another elite defense. Toronto's defense is really, really good. You saw what they did to Kemba Walker. You saw all the creative ways that they forced the Celtics into things that they didn't want to do. But that defense, you know, as the cliche goes, defense does indeed win championships. This defense is, if they can play like this for another two series, who knows? Maybe that'll hold true again.
Oh, and of course, too, just to highlight again on that block, too, because Marcus Smart in that game six, almost in that double overtime where he went for a block and then Norman Powell actually converted, I believe it was the and one layup there in game six, and he almost got a second chance at it there in game seven and capitalized on it. It was one of the most beautiful things I had seen in a long time from Marcus Smart on the defensive end. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Raptors in this loss, because I thought throughout the series, one guy who was a difference maker for the Raptors all season fell short, and that was Pascal Siakam.
Mm-hmm.
What did the Celtics do so well that forced him out of his comfort zone?
I mean, part of it, most of it is Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown defended Pascal Siakam just wonderfully. It got him a little further out than he wanted to be. He forced him to take contested shots. So you got to start that with full credit on Jaylen, you know, for Jaylen Brown. Add into that other guys who had cracks at defending him, who did fairly well at times. Semi Ojeleye earlier in the series had a good game one against Siakam. Grant Williams had some good time against Siakam. Even in this game, when Siakam scored on him late, Grant Williams made him work for it. And that is, as it's not quite as effective defensively as some of the stops that Jaylen Brown was getting, but if you make a guy work really hard for his points, it's just going to be that much harder for him to score the next time down, because you're working him. He's playing 40 plus minutes a game. He's tired, and you know you do also have to leave some percentage of this on Pascal Siakam himself, because he was not good in any of the restarts. And once he got down there, he just struggled. He struggled against everybody in the bubble, and you just got to think that you know Siakam is still learning. And you got to give him a little bit of leeway. This is his first year as like the guy, and playoffs are a little bit of a different animal. It's going to be a huge learning experience for him. You know that he probably feeds off the home crowd a bit and does well at home. So, you know, he's a young guy and he's going to grow, but let's really give credit to Jaylen Brown for doing a great, great job on Siakam.
Well, let's give credit as well, I think, to Jason Tatum, who you know struggled a little bit starting in the bubble in the seeding games, but lately, especially down the stretch in this series, has really come on, and I think is starting to show some of that promise that people have been looking for so long from Jason Tatum. To me, he's starting to look like he could become that superstar that everybody has been expecting.
Yeah, I mean, he had a great game seven. That's where stars are made, right?
Like, no doubt.
He's like, you know, when you look back over the course of the series, and you know, as the further you get out, you forget all of the other stuff. You forget some of the struggles that he had. You just say, wow, look what happened in this playoff run. They went to a game seven. Look at Tatum, 29 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assists in a game seven. Wow, that builds the legend.
Yep.
And the thing about Tatum is there's so much more that he can do better. And that's the scary part for the rest of the league. He can tighten up that handle a lot because he had trouble, and he has had trouble against smaller guards. I think part of the reason why Toronto gives him trouble is they've thrown different looks at him, and they've got guys that can kind of disrupt his dribble. But when it was time to step up, he got himself to the line. Took 10 free throws in game seven. He hit his threes. He had half of his threes, 4 of 8 from three. A star player is the guy that when no matter what they're throwing at you, you find a way to produce. And I know that sets us up for some Kemba Walker discussion, but that's what like Tatum has that next level stardom. And you know, frankly, and I know we're going to talk about Kemba, frankly, it's because Tatum is like 6'9" and he has the ability to say, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm rising up and I'm shooting over somebody. Like he has that option. And that's why he has the potential to be like Kemba's a great player. Jason Tatum is a superstar player in the making.
I couldn't agree more, and I really like how you pointed out his handling, because actually last night as a friend and I watched the game on the couch, one of the things he said is, why is Jason Tatum dribbling the ball off his foot so much tonight? Felt like he did that a couple times, actually in one key possession for mm-hmm. the Celtics he did that. So I think you're 100% right in that analysis, and of course he became the second youngest player in NBA history to have at least 25 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists in a game 7, only trailing his idol and Kobe Bryant now with that, so just to add to a little bit of that. But of course, you already you already kind of let us in there, John, with the Kemba talk. We'll just get right to it. He struggled overall. You can't deny it, but made a couple of key plays in the fourth, including the clinching free throws with 7.9 seconds left. What was going on with him, though, this series, and what did the Celtics have to do to get him kind of back into a shooting rhythm and back into this offense?
Well, I mean, the Raptors decided that he wasn't going to beat them, and he didn't. And he had, again, this is one of those things where when you come out of the series, you say, you forget that certain things happened. People forget that he had 29 points in a game three that they lost. We only remember the Anunoby shot. But if he misses that shot, we look back at that series and say, wow, Kemba really stepped up with a 29-point game, and he had a 21-point game in game five. So he did have a couple of good games in this series, and you know, early on, even earlier on in the two wins, he was okay. But in these last two games, he really struggled because they played this box on one, and they basically picked him up and had a guy. If you look at some of those earlier possessions, Jason Tatum's dribbling at the top of the key, and about 5 feet to his right and 3 feet behind him is Kemba Walker standing there with Fred VanVleet facing Kemba, just face guarding him and completely out of the play. And so that defense is geared towards, look, we're not, whatever happens, we're going to take our chances. We can still scramble to cover Tatum. We're going to scramble after that. And if Jaylen Brown hits shots and if Marcus Smart hits shots, then hey, we got to pick our poison. And that's something that, you know, it was working for a little bit because Marcus Smart was not hitting his shots early. Then Kemba comes in later on and is out of rhythm, and it can never get to a rhythm. So it's tough for a guy like Kemba, who's not even 6 feet tall. And again, the height thing really matters here because he can't just rise up and shoot over the top of somebody like Tatum can. He has to work really, really hard to get his offense. He has to drive and stop on a dime and do his little pull-ups or use two picks to get free. And that against Toronto, that's going to be hard. I think against Miami, he might have a little bit of an easier time getting into some space because they're a different team with a different defensive scheme. And we'll have to see, but Toronto really made it a point to make Kemba's life hard.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It really seemed like they did focus on him. And when you mentioned that he had the 29-point game, you were right. I actually totally forgot that he had the 29-point game in Game 3, to add to your point there, because of that shot being so amazing. But wanted to actually kind of get your thoughts on some of Brad Stevens' lineups last night. I was openly upset at my house, standing up on the couch, extremely upset when I was seeing a lineup with Daniel Tice, Semi Ojeleye, Brad Wanamaker, I believe it was Tatum and Kemba in the game when Kemba's struggling like that. To me, I'm looking at that lineup in a Game 7 going, Brad, what is that? I understand the idea behind it, but again, I'm looking at that going, you literally have one scorer on the court now with the way Kemba's playing. What's the idea behind that? And I also want to ask you what you thought on Grant Williams' minutes down the stretch, because I thought he kind of was given those extra minutes because of Tice's foul trouble, but also he kind of earned those minutes throughout the game, I thought.
Well, I'll tell you, I think for your first question, I'll channel Brad Stevens.
Thank you.
I can tell you he's going to, if you ask him that same question, he'd say, guys got to rest sometime. And, I think that's the thought process behind there. Because you look at Semi Ojeleye's minutes, he played half his minutes in the second quarter.
Yep.
And, you know, that's a time where you feel like, all right, let's try to see if we can steal some minutes here or there for some of our guys. You know, you're trying to match up, I think, a little bit. And look, Semi Ojeleye has generally been dependable. And look, you throw him in there, sometimes he's going to hit two or three three-pointers, and it's like, wow, Semi off the bench, amazing.
Yep.
You don't know until you throw him out there. And he did hit a three.
Yes, he did.
So, and he got a few rebounds. He wasn't particularly great, but sometimes you say, all right, we know that we have Ojeleye who can defend Siakam. He's shown that he can defend Siakam. I just talked about the job he did on Siakam in game one. So let's see if we can recapture that. And if we can't, then, all right, let's go to the next guy. I mean, you look down the line, Wanamaker only played 9 minutes. Ogilvy only played 9 minutes. Grant only played 7 minutes. They still relied on Tatum for 44, Brown for almost 43, Smart for 43, Kemba for almost 44. I mean, I don't think you can play all those guys 48 minutes.
No, definitely not.
That's why somebody has to come in, and who are his other options? Romeo Langford? No. I mean, so you kind of have no choice.
What about a Tremont Waters? Sorry to interrupt, but I mean, the guy, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, because you know me, I love him. After working with the Red Claws this year, getting to watch him at every home game, that's my guy. So for me, it's heartbreaking to see Wanamaker and getting those minutes when I'm like, get Tremont in the game.
Oh, no. I mean, I love Tremont Waters.
Yeah.
I love him. That is not the opportunity. Game 7 of a semifinal series against the defending champions.
Right.
You're going to be like, oh, now, I know you haven't played in, 3 weeks, but here. Trey.
Yeah, maybe I'm giving him a little too much credit on that.
Yeah. But anyway, back to Grant Williams. I think Grant really, I mean, he's his preparedness, his work ethic. I mean, when I was the one asking the guys after the game about Grant, and, I asked Marcus Smart, and Marcus Smart just, shook his head. He's like, oh, man, Grant. And then he called him the General, by the way. So just put it out there. I think Grant's nickname is now the General.
Wow.
So
okay.
Put that out there.
Yeah, wow.
But he said, he also said, he's not a rookie the way he plays anymore, which is, he did have poise. And as I was writing the recap, before he missed those two free throws, I was writing a little section on Grant Williams was not afraid of that moment. And I think, okay, so he missed a couple of free throws, so maybe he was a tiny bit nervous in that moment. But everywhere else, when he was like, okay, so he's not supposed to be a shooter or a scorer, so I'll give him a little bit of a pass being a rookie in that situation. But he still, Kemba says that Grant saved him in that play. Because he kind of tried to, he was kind of stuck, and he dropped the pass down, and Grant just gripped that pass from everybody else and went up and pulled Kyle Lowry's arm up at the same time, drawing that foul and fouling Lowry out. That low key was the biggest part of the game, because Lowry's the guy that's been killing the Celtics in these situations, and now down the stretch, the last 30 seconds, you don't have Lowry to drive and either score or drive and set up a teammate like he'd been doing. He was a killer this series. Then that leaves Fred VanVleet to do it on his own, and then Grant later on switches onto VanVleet, stays with him, forces him into an insanely difficult shot that falls 5 feet short of the rim. Those plays are just huge for a rookie to do those. I mean, that he came up big, gave the Celtics exactly what they needed in those moments.
All right, John, we've done an awful lot of looking back. Let's look forward to the Eastern Conference Final now against the Miami Heat. We both think that's probably a better matchup for the Celtics than the Raptors were, but Miami is maybe the one team left that nobody expected to be at this point, which is always dangerous. How do you see the Eastern Conference Final matching up?
Yeah, Miami has stepped up in a big way. I mean, obviously, some of it was their very advantageous matchup against the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, that's what the playoffs are. Sometimes matchups just work out in your favor. Butler's this weird kind of player, because he's good, but he's not going to be the best player in that series. He shouldn't be the best player in that series. The Celtics have guys who are better overall basketball players than Jimmy Butler, but he has this sheer will to find his way to all of a sudden becoming a good three-point shooter when he's not in down the stretch. So they do have to account for that. I think a huge key in this series is going to be Jay Crowder, who has given them a very tough wing defender who can now hit threes again. Crowder's playing like he was playing back in Boston. And that was the best basketball that he played in his career. He hit 4 of 9 from three in that closeout game against the Milwaukee Bucks. He's back to shooting confidently. He's in a culture that I think he respects. He's on a team that I think respects what he does, and he is thriving. That's big, because he's a guy that you can throw onto Jason Tatum, and he's got the size, the bulk, the just the overall defensive ability. That's going to be something the Celtics are going to need to figure out. Bam Adebayo is a problem. He's going to be something that someone that the Celtics are going to have to game plan for. And I haven't even talked about any of the shooting that they have on the perimeter,
yeah,
which is why they are such a good shooting team, because after having to account for guys like that, you still have Duncan Robinson, Goran Dragic, Tyler Hero out there just bombing away. So this is going to be a tough matchup for the Celtics, but I think this is going to be a better matchup for the Celtics as well, and this is probably the team that Miami didn't want to see, because they could have taken advantage of Toronto's defense with their three-point shooting. So I think this will be another great series. I don't think this is going to be a four- or five-game series either way. This might mirror the Raptors series in a lot of ways. It's going to be different, and that bench, I think, is going to be a tough one for the Celtics to deal with, but this is going to be a fun one.
Well, and real quick, John, before we let you go, I want to ask of another storyline that I brought up to my brother Jeff here on the show that I found was super interesting that ESPN put out a little bit about the history between Danny Ainge and Pat Riley. coming back to 2013, the infamous formal statement that Pat Riley telling Danny to... Well, we can't say it on radio, but if you want to look it up, you can look it up for our fans. But again, what does this rivalry bring to it? And it's not just on the court now. It's in the front offices that these two teams really dislike each other. You talk about the Ray Allen situation, how the Celtics also kind of snuck Gordon Hayward away. What's this going to be like for Danny Ainge and for Pat Riley now that they're meeting here again for the first time in quite some time for a chance to go to the finals?
I mean, that goes all the way back to the 80s, right? I mean, this is Celtics-Lakers kind of repackaged in teal and electric pink, right? this is fun. When you can go all the way to the front office, this is what makes a series fun. A little bit of hatred, a little bit of animosity. We know that Danny Ainge has riled up, no pun intended, Pat Riley in the past. I'm sure Pat Riley has some not so fond memories and not so great opinions of Danny Ainge. You know, remember, when Danny Ainge was playing, he was hated with capital, all caps, exclamation points, and against the Lakers, I mean, he did plenty to earn that. So I think this history between them just adds some fuel. The only place there's no real juice is between the coaches, because those are two of the most, like, down-to-earth, mm-hmm. respectful, not going to say anything coaches. But
seriously.
But the look, there's animosity on the court. Jay Crowder, look, remember when Jay Crowder was upset that Celtics fans were cheering for Gordon Hayward when the Jazz came because he thought that they were cheering for Hayward to take his spot? And so he's going to have some animosity against the Celtics a little bit. They traded him.
The clinic.
Right? You know, I mean, the Kelly, are we going to be on the other side of a Kelly Olynyk game 7? You don't want that to happen. You don't want that at all. I mean, that would be horrible. I mean, I never in my life do I want to feel like a Washington Wizards fan. So we cannot have that. But this is going to be, look, like I said, Crowder's got an edge. Jimmy Butler's got an edge. The Heat have an edge despite, you know, the whole, you know, you'd think people from South Beach would be a little more calm, but they have an edge. And the Celtics have an edge too. They will match that energy. So we'll see pushing, we'll see shoving, we'll see double technicals thrown around. And this is going to be a battle, and it's exactly how Pat Riley and Danny Ainge want it.
No doubt. John Corrales, thanks so much for joining us. We're out of time, but I'm sure we'll be speaking again soon.
You got it. See you guys.
All right. Again, John Corrales, host of the Locked On Celtics podcast and writing from masslive.com.
All right. It's on to the conference finals. I'll be back with a Monday podcast, regular grind Monday through Friday. If you're new, just checking this out, This is not normal. Don't normally do things on a Saturday, but I figured I have to put something out there. I thought that radio appearance was a pretty good conversation for 20 minutes that we could, you know, would suffice for a podcast that would get you what I hope worked. But Monday through Friday, we'll do crossover episodes with Miami Heat folks, with Locked On Heat. I'm back on the normal grind. So those of you who are new, if you want to subscribe, please do so. You can follow on Spotify. Regular listeners, 5-star rating, good written review. You got a bonus podcast. I gave you 6 podcasts this week. Come on. I know that makes up for probably a few weeks ago when I didn't do a Friday podcast, but there we go. So that's it. Hope you enjoyed it. Enjoy your weekend. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.